This is Audible.
Amber Allen Publishing presents The Fifth Agreement, a practical guide to self-mastery, written by Don Miguel Ruiz and Don Jose Ruiz, and read by Peter Coyote. The Four Agreements was published many years ago. If you've read the book, you already know what these agreements can do. They have the ability to transform your life by breaking thousands of limiting agreements you have made with yourself, with other people, with life itself. Be impeccable with your word. Don't take anything personally. Don't make assumptions, and always do your best. The first time you hear these four agreements, you feel that you already know them because they're pure common sense. They speak to the heart of all human beings and go much deeper than just the words you're hearing. With practice, these four simple agreements take you to what you really are, not what you pretend to be. Just like magic, because they are magic, the four agreements slowly help you to recover your authentic self. Now it's time for another gift, the fifth agreement. Be skeptical, but learn to listen. This agreement is made with words, of course, but its meaning and intent is beyond the words. The fifth agreement is ultimately about seeing your whole reality with the eyes of truth, without words. The result of practicing the fifth agreement is the complete acceptance of yourself just the way you are, and the complete acceptance of everybody else just the way they are. The reward is your eternal happiness. Chapter 1. In the Beginning. From the moment you are born, you deliver a message to the world. What is the message? The message is you, that child. It's the presence of an angel, a messenger from the infinite in a human body. The infinite, a total power, creates a program just for you, and everything you need to be what you are is in the program. You're born, you grow up, you mate, you grow old, and in the end you return to the infinite. Every cell in your body is a universe of its own. It's intelligent. It's complete, and it's programmed to be whatever it is. You're programmed to be you, whatever you are, and it makes no difference to the program what your mind thinks you are. The program is not in the thinking mind. It's in the body, in what we call the DNA, and in the beginning you instinctively follow its wisdom. As a very young child, you know what you like, what you don't like, when you like it, when you don't. You follow what you like, you try to avoid what you don't like. You follow your instincts, and those instincts guide you to be happy, to enjoy life, to play, to love, to fulfill your needs. Then what happens? Your body begins to develop. Your mind begins to mature, and you begin to use symbols to deliver your message. Just as the birds understand the birds and the cats understand the cats, the humans understand the humans through a symbology. If you were born on an island and then lived all alone, it might take you 10 years, but you would give a name to everything that you see, and you would use that language to communicate a message, even if it was only to yourself. Why would you do this? Well, it's easy to understand that it's not because humans are so intelligent. It's because we're programmed to create a language, to invent an entire symbology for ourselves. As you know, all around the world, humans speak and write in thousands of different languages. Humans have invented all kinds of symbols to communicate, not only with other humans, but more importantly with ourselves. The symbols can be sounds that we speak, motions that we make, or handwriting and signs that are graphic in nature. There are symbols for objects, ideas, music, and mathematics. But the introduction of sounds is the very first step, which means we learn to use symbols to speak. The humans who come before us already have names for everything that exists, and they teach us the meaning of sounds. They call this a table. They call that a chair. They also have names for things that only exist in our imagination, like mermaids and unicorns. Every word that we learn is a symbol for something real or imagined, and there are thousands of words to learn. If we observe children who are 1 to 4 years old, we can see the effort they make trying to learn an entire symbology. It's a big effort that we usually don't remember because our mind is not yet mature, but with repetition and practice, we finally learn to speak. Once we learn to speak, the humans who take care of us teach us what they know, which means they program us with knowledge. The humans we live with have lots of knowledge, including all the social, religious, and moral rules of their culture. They hook our attention, pass on the information, and teach us to be like them. We learn how to be a man or a woman according to the society in which we are born. We learn how to behave the right way in our society, which means how to be a good human. In truth, we are domesticated the same way that a dog, a cat, or any animal is domesticated, through a system of punishment and reward. We're told that we're a good boy or a good girl when we do what the grown-ups want us to do. We're a bad boy or a bad girl when we don't do what they want us to do. Sometimes we are punished without being bad, and sometimes we are rewarded without being good. Out of fear of being punished and fear of not getting a reward, we start trying to please other people. We try to be good because bad people don't receive rewards. They're punished. In human domestication, all the rules and values of our family and society are imposed on us. We don't have the opportunity to choose our beliefs. We are told what to believe and what not to believe. The people we live with tell us their opinions, what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong, what is beautiful and what is ugly. Just like a computer, all that information is downloaded into our head. We are innocent. We believe what our parents or other grown-ups tell us. We agree, and the information is stored in our memory. Everything we learn goes into our mind by agreement, and it stays in our mind by agreement. But first, it goes through the attention. The attention is very important in humans because it's the part of the mind that makes it possible for us to concentrate on a single object or thought out of a whole range of possibilities. Through the attention, information from the outside is conveyed to the inside, and vice versa. The attention is the channel we use to send and receive messages from human to human. It's like a bridge from one mind to another mind. We open the bridge with sounds, signs, symbols, touch, with any event that hooks the attention. This is how we teach, and this is how we learn. We cannot teach anything if we don't have someone's attention. We cannot learn anything if we don't pay attention. Using the attention, the grown-ups teach us how to create an entire reality in our mind with the use of symbols. After they teach us a symbology by sound, the grown-ups drill us with our ABCs, and we learn the same language, but graphically. Our imagination begins to develop, our curiosity grows stronger, and we start to ask questions. We ask and ask, and we keep asking questions. We gather information from everywhere. And we know that we've finally mastered a language when we are able to use the symbols to talk to ourselves in our head. This is when we learn to think. Before that, we don't think. We mimic sounds and use symbols to communicate. But life is simple before we attach any meaning or emotion to the symbols. Once we give meaning to the symbols, we begin to use them to try to make sense of everything that happens in our lives. We use the symbols to think about things that are real, and to think about things that aren't real, but that we start to imagine are real, like beautiful and ugly, skinny and fat, smart and stupid. And if you notice, we can only think in a language that we master. For many years, I spoke only Spanish, and it took a long time for me to master enough symbols in English to think in English. To master a language is not easy, but at a certain point, we find ourselves thinking with the symbols we learn. By the time we go to school, when we're 5 or 6 years old, we understand the meaning of abstract concepts like right and wrong, winner and loser, perfect and imperfect. In school, we continue to learn how to read and write the symbols we already know, and the written language makes it possible for us to accumulate more knowledge. We continue to give meaning to more and more symbols, and thinking becomes not only effortless, but automatic. Now the symbols that we learned are hooking our attention all by themselves. It's what we know that's talking to us, and we are listening to what our knowledge says. I call it the voice of knowledge, because knowledge is talking in our head. Many times we hear the voice with different tonalities. We hear the voice of our mother, our father, our brothers and sisters, and the voice never stops talking. The voice isn't real. It's our creation. But we believe that it's real because we give it life through the power of our faith, which means we believe, without a doubt, what that voice is telling us. This is when the opinions of the humans around us start taking over our mind. Everybody has an opinion of us, and they tell us what we are. As very young children, we don't know what we are. The only way we can see ourselves is through a mirror, and other people act as that mirror. Our mother tells us what we are, and we believe her. It's completely different from what our father tells us, or what our brothers and sisters tell us, but we agree with them too. People tell us how we look, and it's especially true when we are little children. Look, you have the eyes of your mother, the nose of your grandfather. We listen to all the opinions of our family, our teachers, and the big children at school. We see our image in those mirrors. We agree that this is what we are. And as soon as we agree, that opinion becomes a part of our belief system. Little by little, all these opinions modify our behavior, and in our mind we form an image of ourselves according to what other people say we are. I'm beautiful. I'm not so beautiful. I'm smart. I'm not so smart. I'm a winner. I'm a loser. I'm good at this. I'm bad at that. At a certain point, all the opinions of our parents and teachers, religion and society, make us believe that we need to be a certain way in order to be accepted. They tell us the way we should be, the way we should look, the way we should behave. We need to be this way. We shouldn't be that way. And because it's not okay for us to be what we are, we start pretending to be what we are not. The fear of being rejected becomes the fear of not being good enough. And we start searching for something that we call perfection. In our search, we form an image of perfection, the way we wish to be. But we know that we are not, and we begin to judge ourselves for that. We don't like ourselves, and we tell ourselves, "Look how silly you look. How ugly you are. Look how fat. How short, how weak, how stupid you are. This is when the drama begins, because now the symbols are going against us. We don't even notice that we've learned to use the symbols to reject ourselves. Before domestication, we don't care what we are or what we look like. Our tendency is to explore, to express our creativity, to seek pleasure and avoid pain. As little children, we're wild and free. We run around naked without self-consciousness or self-judgment. We speak the truth because we live in truth. Our attention is in the moment. We're not afraid of the future or ashamed of the past. After domestication, we try to be good enough for everybody else, but we're no longer good enough for ourselves because we can never live up to our image of perfection. All of our normal human tendencies are lost in the process of domestication, and we begin to search for what we have lost. We start searching for freedom because we're no longer free to be what we really are. We start searching for happiness because we're no longer happy. We start searching for beauty because we no longer believe that we are beautiful. We continue to grow. And in our adolescence, our body is programmed to introduce a substance we call hormones. Our physical body is no longer a child's, and we don't fit in with the way of life we lived before. We don't want to hear our parents tell us what to do and what not to do. We want our freedom. We want to be ourselves. But we are also afraid to be by ourselves. People tell us, "You're not a child anymore," but we're not an adult either, and it's a difficult time for most humans. By the time we are teenagers, we don't need anyone to domesticate us. We've learned to judge ourselves, punish ourselves, and reward ourselves according to the same belief system we were given, and using the same system of punishment and reward. The domestication may be easier for people in some places in the world and harder for people in other places. But in general, none of us has a chance of escaping the domestication. None of us. Finally, the body matures and everything changes again. We start searching once again, but now more and more what we are searching for is ourself. We are searching for love because we have learned to believe that love is somewhere outside of us. We're searching for justice because there is no justice in the belief system we were taught. We are searching for truth because we only believe in the knowledge we have stored in our mind. And of course, we're still searching for perfection because now we agree with the rest of the humans that nobody's perfect. Chapter 2, Symbols and Agreements. During all the years that we grow up, we make countless agreements with ourselves, with society, and with everybody around us. But the most important agreements are the ones we make with ourselves by understanding the symbols we learned. The symbols are telling us what we believe about ourselves. They are telling us what we are and what we are not, what is possible and what is not possible. The voice of knowledge is telling us everything that we know. But who tells us if what we know is the truth? When we go to grammar school, high school, and college, we acquire a lot of knowledge, but what do we really know? Do we master the truth? No, we master a language, a symbology. And that symbology is only the truth because we agree, not because it's really the truth. Wherever we are born, whatever language we learn to speak, we find that almost everything we know is really about agreements, beginning with the symbols that we learn. If we're born in England, we learn English symbols. If we're born in China, we learn Chinese symbols. But whether we learn English, Chinese, Spanish, German, Russian, or any other language, the symbols only have value because we assign them a value and agree on their meaning. If we don't agree, the symbols are meaningless. The word tree, for example, is meaningful for people who speak English. But tree doesn't mean anything unless we believe that it means something, unless we agree. What it means for you, it means for me, and that's why we understand one another. What I'm saying right now, you understand because we agree with the meaning of every word that was programmed in our mind. But this doesn't mean that we completely agree. Each of us gives a meaning to every word, and it's not exactly the same for everyone. If we focus our attention on the way any word is created, we find that whatever meaning we give to a word is there for no real reason. We put words together from nowhere. We make them up. Humans invent every sound, every letter, every graphic symbol. We hear a sound like A, and we say, this is the symbol for that sound. We draw a symbol to represent the sound. We put the symbol and the sound together and we give it a meaning. Then, every word in our mind has a meaning, but not because it's real. Not because it's truth, it's just an agreement with ourselves and with everybody else who learns the same symbology. If we travel to a country where people speak a different language, we suddenly realize the importance and power of agreement. A tree is only a tree. The sun is only the sun. The earth is only the earth if we agree. These words have no meaning in France, Russia, Turkey, Sweden, or in any other place where the agreements are different. If we learn to speak English and we go to China, we hear people talking but we don't understand a word they're saying. Nothing makes sense to us because it's not the symbology that we learned. Many things are foreign to us. It's like being in another world. If we visit their places of worship, we find that their beliefs are completely different. Their rituals are completely different. Their mythologies have nothing to do with what we learned. One way to understand their culture is to learn the symbols they use, which means their language. But if we learn a new way of being, a new religion or philosophy, this may create a conflict with what we learned before. New beliefs clash with old beliefs. And the doubt comes right away. What is right? What is wrong? Is it true what I learned before? Is it true what I'm learning right now? What is the truth? The truth is that all of our knowledge, 100% of it, is nothing more than symbolism or words that we invent for the need to understand and express what we perceive. Every word in our mind is just a symbol. But every word has the power of our faith because we believe in its meaning without a doubt. Humans construct an entire belief system made up of symbols. We build an entire edifice of knowledge. Then we use everything we know, which is nothing but symbology, to justify what we believe, to try to explain first to ourselves, then to everybody around us, the way we perceive ourselves. The way we perceive the entire universe. If we're aware of this, then it's easy to understand that all of the different mythologies, religions, and philosophies around the world, all of the different beliefs and ways of thinking, are nothing but agreements with ourselves and with other humans. They're our creation. But are they true? Everything that exists is true. The earth is true. The stars are true. The entire universe has always been true. But the symbols that we use to construct what we know are only true because we say so. There's a beautiful story in the Bible that illustrates the relationship between God and humans. In this story, Adam and God are walking together around the world, and God asks Adam what he wants to name everything. One by one, Adam gives a name to everything he perceives. Let's call this a tree. Let's call this a bird. Let's call this a flower. And God agrees with Adam. The story is about the creation of symbols, the creation of an entire language, and it works by agreement. It's like two sides of the same coin. We can say that one side is pure perception, what Adam perceives. The other side is the meaning that Adam gives to whatever he perceives. There's the object of perception, which is the truth, and there's our interpretation of the truth, which is just a point of view. The truth is objective, and we call it science. Our interpretation of the truth is subjective, and we call it art. Science and art, the truth and our interpretation of the truth. The real truth is life's creation, and it's the absolute truth because it's truth for everyone. Our interpretation of the truth is our creation, and it's a relative truth because it's only truth by agreement. With this awareness, we can begin to understand the human mind. All humans are programmed to perceive the truth, and we don't need a language to do this. But in order to express the truth, we need to use a language, and that expression is our art. It's no longer the truth because words are symbols, and symbols can only represent or symbolize the truth. For example, we can see a tree even if we don't know the symbol tree. Without the symbol, we just see an object. The object is real. It is truth, and we perceive it. Once we call it a tree, we are using art to express a point of view. By using more symbols, we can describe the tree, every leaf, every color. We can say it's a big tree, a small tree, a beautiful tree, an ugly tree. But is it the truth? No. The tree is still the same tree. Our interpretation of the tree will depend on our emotional reaction to the tree, and our emotional reaction will depend on the symbols that we use to recreate the tree in our mind. As you can see, our interpretation of the tree is not exactly the truth, but our interpretation is a reflection of the truth, and that reflection is what we call the human mind. The human mind is nothing but a virtual reality. It isn't real. What's real is truth. What's truth is truth for everyone. But the virtual reality is our personal creation. It's our art, and it's only truth for each one of us. All humans are artists, all of us. Every symbol, every word is a little piece of art. From my point of view, and thanks to our programming, our greatest masterpiece of art is the use of a language to create an entire virtual reality within our mind. The virtual reality we create could be a clear reflection of the truth, or it could be completely distorted. Either way, it's art. Our creation could be our personal heaven, or it could be our personal hell. It doesn't matter. It's art. But what we can do with the awareness of what is truth and what is virtual is endless. The truth leads to self-mastery, to a life that's very easy. Our distortion of the truth often leads to needless conflict and human suffering. Awareness makes all the difference. Humans are born with awareness. We are born to perceive the truth. But we accumulate knowledge and we learn to deny what we perceive. We practice not being aware, and we master not being aware. The word is pure magic, and we learn to use our magic against ourselves, against creation, against our own kind. To be aware means to open our eyes to see the truth. When we see the truth, we see everything just as it is, not the way we believe it is, not the way we wish it to be. Awareness opens the door to millions of possibilities, and if we know that we are the artists of our own life, we can make a choice from all those possibilities. What I'm sharing with you comes from my personal training, which I call Toltec wisdom. Toltec is a Nahuatl word meaning artist. From my point of view, to be a Toltec has nothing to do with any philosophy or place in the world. To be a Toltec is just to be an artist. A Toltec is an artist of the spirit. And as artists, we like beauty. We don't like what is not beauty. If we become better artists, our virtual reality becomes a better reflection of the truth, and we can create a masterpiece of heaven with our art. Thousands of years ago, the Toltec created three masteries of the artist: the mastery of awareness, the mastery of transformation, and the mastery of love, intent, or faith. The separation is just for our understanding, because the three masteries become only one. The truth is only one, and the truth is what we are talking about. These three masteries guide us out of suffering and return us to our true nature, which is happiness, freedom, and love. The Toltec understood that we are going to create a virtual reality with or without awareness. If it's with awareness, we're going to enjoy our creation. And whether we facilitate the transformation or resist it, our virtual reality is always transforming. If we practice the art of transformation, soon we're facilitating the transformation. And instead of using our magic against ourselves, we're using our magic for the expression of our happiness and our love. When we master love, intent, or faith, we master the dream of our life. And when all three masteries are accomplished, we reclaim our divinity and become one with God. This is the goal of the Toltec. The Toltec didn't have the technology that we have at the present time. They didn't know about the virtual reality of computers, but they knew how to master the virtual reality of the human mind. The mastery of the human mind requires complete control of the attention, the way we interpret and react to information we perceive from inside of us and outside of us. The Toltec understood that each one of us is just like God, but instead of creating, we recreate. And what do we recreate? What we perceive. That is what becomes the human mind. If we can understand what the human mind is and what the human mind does, we can begin to separate reality from virtual reality, or pure perception, which is truth, from symbology, which is art. Self-mastery is all about awareness, and it begins with self-awareness. First, to be aware of what is real, and then to be aware of what is virtual, which means what we believe about what is real. With this awareness, we know that we can change what is virtual by changing what we believe. What is real, we cannot change, and it doesn't matter what we believe. Chapter 3: The Story of You. For thousands of years, humans have tried to understand the universe, nature, and mainly human nature. It's amazing to observe humans in action all around the world, in all the different places and cultures that exist on this beautiful planet Earth. Humans make a lot of effort to understand, but in doing so, we also make a lot of assumptions. As artists, we distort the truth and create the most amazing theories. We create entire philosophies and the most amazing religions. We create stories and superstitions about everything, including ourselves. And this is exactly the main point. We create them. Humans are born with the power of creation, and we are constantly creating stories with the words that we learned. Every one of us uses the word to form our opinions, to express our point of view. Countless events are happening all around us, and using the attention, we have the capacity to put all these events together in a story. We create the story of our own life, the story of our family, the story of our community, the story of our country, the story of humanity, the story of the entire world. Every one of us has a story that we share, a message that we deliver to ourselves and to everyone and everything around us. You were programmed to deliver a message, and the creation of that message is your greatest art. What is the message? Your life. With that message, you create mainly the story of you, and then a story about everything you perceive. You create an entire virtual reality in your mind, and you live in that reality. When you think, you're thinking in your language. You're repeating in your mind all those symbols that mean something to you. You're giving yourself a message, and that message is the truth for you, because you believe that it's the truth. The story of you is everything that you know about you. And when I say this, I'm talking to you knowledge, what you believe you are, not to you, the human, what you really are. As you can see, I make a distinction between you and you, because one of you is real, and one of you is not real. You, the physical human, are real. You are the truth. You, knowledge, you're not real. You're virtual. You only exist because of the agreements you made with yourself and with the other humans around you. You, knowledge, come from the symbols you hear in your head, from all the opinions of the people you love, the people you don't love, the people you know, and mostly the people you'll never know. Who is talking in your head? You make the assumption that it's you. But if you're the one who is talking, then who's listening? You, knowledge, are the one who is talking in your head, telling you what you are. You, the human, are listening. But you, the human, existed long before you had knowledge. You existed long before you understood all those symbols, before you learned to speak. And just like any child, before he or she learns to speak, you were completely authentic. You didn't pretend to be what you are not. Without even knowing it, you trusted yourself completely. You loved yourself completely. Before you learned knowledge, you were totally free to be what you really are, because all those opinions and stories from other humans were not in your head already. Your mind is full of knowledge, but how are you using that knowledge? How are you using the word when it comes to describing yourself? When you look at yourself in a mirror, do you like what you see? Or do you judge your body and use all those symbols to tell yourself lies? Is it really true that you are too short or too tall, too heavy or too thin? Is it really true that you are not beautiful? Is it really true that you're not perfect, just the way you are? Can you see all the judgments that you have about yourself? Every judgment is just an opinion. It's just a point of view. And that point of view wasn't there when you were born. Everything you think about yourself, everything you believe about yourself is because you learned it. You learned the opinions from mom, dad, siblings, and society. They sent all those images of how a body should look. They expressed all those opinions about the way you are, the way you are not, the way you should be. They delivered a message, and you agreed with that message. And now you think so many things about what you are. But are they the truth? You see, the problem is not really knowledge. The problem is believing in a distortion of knowledge, and that's what we call a lie. What is the truth and what is a lie? What is real and what is virtual? Can you see the difference? Or do you believe that voice in your head every time it speaks and distorts the truth while assuring you that what you believe is the way things really are? Is it really true that you're not a good human and that you'll never be good enough? Is it really true that you don't deserve to be happy? Is it really true that you're not worthy of love? Remember when a tree was no longer just a tree? Once you learn a language, you interpret a tree and judge a tree according to everything that you know. That's when a tree becomes the beautiful tree, the ugly tree, the scary tree, the wonderful tree. Well, you do the same thing with yourself. You interpret yourself and judge yourself according to everything that you know. That's when you become the good human, the bad human, the guilty one, the crazy one, the powerful one, the weak one, the beautiful one, the ugly one. You are what you believe you are. Then the first question is, what do you believe you are? If you use your awareness, you'll see everything you believe. And this is how you live your life. Your life is totally dominated by the system of beliefs that you learned. Whatever you believe is creating the story that you're experiencing. Whatever you believe is creating the emotions that you're experiencing. And you may really want to believe that you are what you believe. But that image is completely false. It's not you. The real you is unique and it's beyond everything that you know, because the real you is the truth. You, the human, are the truth. Your physical presence is real. What you believe about yourself is not real, and it's not important unless you want to create a better story for yourself. Truth or fiction, either way, the story that you're creating is a work of art. It's a wonderful story, a beautiful story, but it's just a story, and it's as close to the truth as you can get by using symbols. As an artist, there is no right or wrong way to create your art. There's just beauty, or there's not beauty. There's happiness, or there's not happiness. If you believe yourself to be an artist, then everything becomes possible again. Words are your paintbrush. And your life is the canvas. You can paint whatever you want to paint. You can even copy another artist's work. But what you express with your paintbrush is the way you see yourself, the way you see the entire reality. What you paint is your life, and how it looks will depend on how you are using the word. When you realize this, it may dawn on you that the word is a powerful tool for creation. When you learn to use that tool with awareness, you can make history with the word. What history? Your life's history, of course. The story of you. This brings us to the first and most important of the four agreements. Be impeccable with your word. The word is your power of creation. And that power can be used in more than one direction. One direction is impeccability, where the word creates a beautiful story, your personal heaven on earth. The other direction is misuse of the word, where the word destroys everything around you and creates your personal hell. The word, as a symbol, has the magic and power of creation because it can reproduce an image, an idea, a feeling, or an entire story in your imagination. Just hearing the word horse can reproduce an entire image in your mind. That's the power of a symbol. But it can even be more powerful than that. Just by saying two words, the Godfather, a whole movie can appear in your mind. This is your magic, your power of creation, and it begins with the Word. Perhaps you can understand why the Bible says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." According to many religions, in the beginning nothing existed, and the very first thing that God created was the messenger, the angel who delivers a message. You may understand the need for something that could transfer information from one place to another. Of course, from nowhere to nowhere seems a little complicated, but it's very simple at the same time. In the very beginning, God created the Word, and the Word is a messenger. Then, if God created the Word to deliver a message, and if the Word is a messenger, then that is what you are, a messenger, an angel. The Word exists because of a force that we call life, intent, or God. The Word is the force. It is the intent. And that's why our intent manifests through the Word, no matter what language we speak. The Word is so important in the creation of everything, because the messenger starts to deliver messages, and the entire creation appears out of nowhere. Remember God and Adam talking and walking together? God creates reality, and we recreate reality with the Word. The virtual reality that we create is a reflection of reality. It's our interpretation of reality by use of the Word. Nothing can exist without the Word, because the Word is what we use to create everything that we know. If you notice, I'm changing all the symbols on purpose, so you can see that the different expressions mean the exact same thing. The symbols can change, but the meaning is the same in all the different traditions around the world. If you listen to the intent behind the symbols, you will understand what I'm trying to say. Impeccability of the Word is so important because the Word is you, the messenger. The Word is all about the message you deliver, not just to everyone and everything around you, but the message you deliver to yourself. You're telling yourself a story, but is it the truth? If you're using the Word to create a story with self-judgment and self-rejection, then you're using the Word against yourself, and you're not being impeccable. When you're impeccable, you're not going to tell yourself, "I'm old, I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm not good enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm never going to make it in life." You're not going to use your knowledge against yourself, which means your voice of knowledge is not going to use the Word to judge you, find you guilty, and punish you. Your mind is so powerful that it perceives the story that you create. If you create self-judgment, you create inner conflict that's nothing but a nightmare. Your happiness is up to you, and it depends on how you use the Word. If you get angry and use the Word to send emotional poison to someone else, it appears that you're using the Word against that person, but you're really using the Word against yourself. That action is going to create a like reaction, and that person is going to go against you. If you insult someone, that person may even harm you in response. If you use the Word to create a conflict in which your body may be injured, of course it's against you. Be impeccable with your Word really means never use the power of the Word against yourself. When you're impeccable with your Word, you never betray yourself. You never use the Word to gossip about yourself or to spread emotional poison by gossiping about other people. Gossiping is the main form of communication in human society, and we learn how to gossip by agreement. When we are children, we hear the adults around us gossiping about themselves and giving their opinions about other people, including people they don't even know. But now you're aware that our opinions are not the truth. They're just a point of view. Remember, you're the creator of your own life story. If you use the word impeccably, just imagine the story that you're going to create for yourself. You're going to use the word in the direction of truth and love for yourself. You're going to use the word to express the truth in every thought, in every action, in every word you use to describe yourself, to describe your own life story. And what will be the result? An extraordinarily beautiful life. In other words, you're going to be happy. As you can see, impeccability of the word goes much deeper than it seems. The word is pure magic. And when you adopt the first agreement, magic just happens in your life. Your intentions and desires come easily because there's no resistance. There's no fear. There's only love. You're at peace and you create a life of freedom and fulfillment in every way. Just this one agreement is enough to completely transform your life into your personal heaven. Always be aware of how you're using the word, and be impeccable with your word. Chapter 4. Every mind is a world. When we're born, there are no symbols in our mind, but we have a brain and we have eyes, and our brain is already capturing images that come from light. We start perceiving light. We become familiar with light. And the reaction of our brain to light is an endless play of images in our imagination, in our mind. We are dreaming. From the Toltec point of view, our whole life is a dream because the brain is programmed to dream 24 hours a day. When the brain is awake, there's a material frame that makes us perceive things in a linear way. When the brain is asleep, there is no frame, and the dream has the tendency to change constantly. Even with the brain awake, we have the tendency to daydream, and the dream is constantly changing. The imagination is so powerful that it takes us to many places. We see things in our imagination that other people don't see. We hear things that other people don't hear, or maybe we don't, depending on the way we dream. Imagination gives movement to the images we see, but the images only exist in the mind, in the dream. Light, images, imagination, dreaming. You're dreaming right now, and this is something that you can easily verify. Perhaps you never noticed that your mind is always dreaming. But if you use your imagination for just a moment, you'll understand what I'm trying to explain to you. Imagine that you're looking into a mirror. Inside the mirror is a whole world of objects. But you know that what you see is just a reflection of what is real. It looks like it's real. It looks like the truth, but it's not real. And it's not the truth. If you try to touch the objects inside the mirror, you only touch the surface of the mirror. What you see inside the mirror is just an image of reality, which means it's a virtual reality. It's a dream. And it's the same kind of dream that humans dream with the brain awake. Why? Because what you see inside the mirror is a copy of reality that you create with the capacity of your eyes and your brain. It's an image of the world that you construct within your mind, which means it's how your own mind perceives reality. What a dog sees in the mirror is how the dog's brain perceives reality. What an eagle sees in that same mirror is how the eagle's brain perceives reality. And it's different from your own. Now imagine looking into your eyes instead of a mirror. Your eyes perceive light that's being reflected from millions of objects outside of your eyes. The sun sends light all around the world, and every object reflects light. Billions of rays of light come from everywhere, go inside your eyes, and project images of objects in your eyes. You think you're seeing all these objects, but the only thing you're really seeing is light that's being reflected. Everything you perceive is a reflection of what is real, just like the reflections in a mirror, except for one important difference. Behind the mirror, there is nothing. But behind your eyes is a brain that tries to make sense of everything. Your brain is interpreting everything you perceive according to the meaning you give to every symbol, according to the structure of your language, according to all of the knowledge that was programmed in your mind. Everything you perceive is being filtered through your entire belief system. And the result of interpreting everything you perceive by using everything you believe is your personal dream. This is how you create an entire virtual reality in your mind. Perhaps you can see how easy it is for humans to distort what we perceive. Light reproduces a perfect image of what is real, but we distort the image by creating a story with all those symbols and opinions that we learned. We dream about it with our imagination, and by agreement we think that our dream is the absolute truth, when the real truth is that our dream is a relative truth, a reflection of the truth that is always going to be distorted by all the knowledge we've stored in our memory. Many masters have said that every mind is a world, and it's true. The world we think we see outside of us is actually inside of us. It's just images in our imagination. It's a dream. We're dreaming constantly, and this has been known for centuries, not only in Mexico by the Toltec, but in Greece, in Rome, in India, in Egypt. People all over the world have said, life is a dream. The question is, are we aware of it? When we aren't aware that our mind is always dreaming, it's easy to blame everyone and everything outside of us for all the distortions in our personal dream, for anything that makes us suffer in life. When we become aware that we're living in a dream that we artists are creating, we take a big step in our own evolution, because now we can take responsibility for our creation. To realize that our mind is always dreaming gives us the key to changing our dream if we're not enjoying it. Who is dreaming the story of your life? You are. If you don't like your life, if you don't like what you believe about yourself, you're the only one who can change it. It's your world. It's your dream. If you're enjoying your dream, that's wonderful. Then continue to enjoy each and every moment. If your dream is a nightmare, if there's drama and suffering and you're not enjoying your creation, then you can change it. As I'm sure you're aware, there are millions of books in this world written by millions of dreamers with different points of view. The story of you is as interesting as any of those books, and it's even more interesting because your story continues to change. The way you dream when you were 10 years old is completely different from the way you dream when you were 15, or when you were 20, or 30, or 40, or the way you dream now. The story you're dreaming today is not the same story that you were dreaming yesterday, or even a half an hour ago. Every time you talk about your story, it changes depending on who you're telling the story to, depending on your physical and emotional state at the time, depending on your beliefs at the time. Even if you try to tell the same story, your story is always changing. At a certain point, you find out that it's nothing but a story. It isn't reality. It's a virtual reality. It's nothing but a dream. And it's a shared dream because all humans are dreaming at the same time. The shared dream of humanity, the dream of the planet, was there before you were born. And this is how you learn to create your own art, the story of you. Let's use the power of our imagination to create a dream together, knowing that it's a dream. Imagine that you're in a gigantic mall where there are hundreds of movie theaters. You look around to see what's playing, and you notice a movie that has your name. Amazing. You go inside the theater, and it's empty, except for one person. Very quietly, trying not to interrupt, you sit behind that person who doesn't even notice you. All that person's attention is on the movie. You look at the screen, and what a big surprise. You recognize every character in the movie. Your mother, your father, your brothers and sisters, your beloved, your children, your friends. Then you see the main character of the movie, and it's you. You're the star of the movie, and it's the story of you. And that person in front of you? Well, it's also you, watching yourself act in the movie. Of course, the main character is just the way you believe you are. And so are all the secondary characters, because you know the story of you. After a while, you feel a little overwhelmed by everything you just witnessed, and you decide to go to another theater. In this theater, there's also just one person watching a movie, and she doesn't even notice when you sit beside her. You start watching the movie, and you recognize all the characters, but now you're just a secondary character. This is the story of your mother's life, and she is the one who is watching the movie with all her attention. Then you realize that your mother is not the same person who was in your movie. The way she projects herself is completely different in her movie. It's the way your mother wants everyone to perceive her. You know that it's not authentic. She's just acting. But then you begin to realize that it's the way she perceives herself. And it's kind of a shock. Then you notice that the character who has your face is not the same person who was in your movie. You say to yourself, this isn't me. But now you can see how your mother perceives you, what she believes about you. And it's far from what you believe about yourself. Then you see the character of your father, the way your mother perceives him, and it's not at all the way you perceive him. It's completely distorted. And so is her perception of all the other characters. You see the way your mother perceives your beloved, and you even get a little upset with your mom. How dare she? You stand up and get out of there. You go to the next theater, and it's the story of your beloved. Now you can see the way your beloved perceives you, and the character is completely different from the one who was in your movie and the one who was in your mother's movie. You can see the way your beloved perceives your children, your family, your friends. You can see the way your beloved wants to project him or herself, and it's not the way you perceive your beloved at all. Then you decide to leave that movie and go to your children's movie. You see the way your children see you, the way they see Grandpa, Grandma, and you can hardly believe it. Then you watch the movies of your brothers and sisters, of your friends, and you find out that everybody is distorting all the characters in their movie. After seeing all these movies, you decide to return to the first theater to see your own movie once again. You look at yourself acting in your movie, but you no longer believe anything you're watching. You no longer believe your own story because you can see that it's just a story. Now you know that all the acting you did your whole life was really for nothing, because nobody perceives you the way you want to be perceived. You can see that all the drama that happens in your movie isn't really noticed by anybody around you. It's obvious that everybody's attention is focused on their own movie. They don't even notice when you're sitting right beside them in their theater. The actors all have their attention on their story, and that is the only reality they live in. Their attention is so hooked by their own creation that they don't even notice their own presence, the one who is observing their movie. In that moment, everything changes for you. Nothing is the same anymore, because now you see what's really happening. People live in their own world, in their own movie, in their own story. They invest all their faith in that story, and that story is truth for them. But it's a relative truth, because it's not truth for you. Now you can see that all their opinions about you really concern the character who lives in their movie, not in yours. The one who they are judging in your name is a character they create. Whatever people think of you is really about the image they have of you, and that image isn't you. At this point, it's clear that the people you love the most don't really know you, and you don't know them either. The only thing you know about them is what you believe about them. You only know the image you created for them, and that image has nothing to do with the real people. You thought that you knew your parents, your spouse, your children, and your friends very well. The truth is, you have no idea what is going on in their world, what they are thinking, what they are feeling, what they are dreaming. What is even more surprising is that you thought you knew yourself. Then you come to the conclusion that you don't even know yourself, because you've been acting for so long that you've mastered pretending to be what you are not. With this awareness, you realize how ridiculous it is to say, "My beloved doesn't understand me. Nobody understands me." Of course they don't. You don't even understand yourself. Your personality is always changing from one moment to the next, according to the role you're playing, according to the secondary characters in your story, according to the way you are dreaming at that time. At home, you have a certain personality. At work,